Everybody here knows the procedure. Do you want to speak, Steve?
Yeah, no, we've got a Jehovah's Witness at work, and I chat about things, and he says he doesn't understand. He can't believe that things could get so complicated by evolving on their own. And also, he believes in something about, you know, with Noah's Ark and all the water, it come out of the ground.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have to believe in everything, what the Bible says, even if the Bible has contradictions. But I mean, what's his name, Dawkins and others have explained that it doesn't happen by chance, but it happens over a long period of time. That's how it happens. But of course, they can't allow for that long period of time. I mean, they don't believe that the world was started in 4004 BC, but they believe that humans must have come into being, fairly recently.
Some of these people believe that dinosaurs and people were around at the same time. I think we would have all been eaten.
They're wrong.
Well, I know they're wrong, but I mean, it's...
I'm not sure the Jehovah's Witnesses go that far, but there are other sort of nutters that do. Yeah. Anyway, anybody else got a question or make a contribution? The theory is that if you do, you put your hand up by doing the reaction thing. Okay, Paddy.
Yeah, thanks. Well, that was interesting, actually. You mentioned the sort of irreducible stand that Christians take on human spiritual soul, like they're never going to give up on that. I think you mentioned, I don't know if you added that they believe it's only humans that have got this soul. They don't believe animals have got it. And it occurred to me that one way to attack this is to argue that precisely that if humans have got this, whatever it is, animals logically must have it as well. And the way that you would do that is by science chipping away at the evidential foundations of human uniqueness. And that's being done. A lot of research in recent years has sort of established that things like whales have names for each other and they hold conversations. We can't read what those conversations are. We don't know what the language is or the way that they communicate. The same with dolphins. Also, elephants have an ethical code. Dogs and monkeys have a sense of fairness and justice. So, I mean, there's quite a lot of research showing that. So all of these things tend to sort of, remove the foundations for any theory that basically says humans are in some way essentially unique. And then I don't think they'd like the idea that animals have got souls, but I think that science is moving them towards the idea that they can't continue to claim, some special uniqueness. But if that idea became popular, then I suppose all Christians would have to stop eating meat, for one thing. Anyway, just a thought.
Yeah, I think the difference between humans and other animals is one of quantity, but I'd be prepared to defend the old hypothesis that the difference in quantity between humans and other animals turns into a difference in quality that other animals cannot think abstractly, and that we're the only animal that can. Anyway, other people want to speak. I'm just taking them in the order I see them here. Mike, your name appears above Howard. So Mike first, then Howard.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I don't know if Howard got there a split second before me. I'm happy to let Howard go first.
No, carry on, Mike, you.
All right.
I don't know how this system works. Is it the first? Is it the alphabetical order? Anyway, you're there now.
Right, thanks. Yeah, most of my family is religious. I'm one of the few who isn't, including a branch of the family that are Jehovah's Witnesses as well. Although it never really comes up in conversation. And I suppose the only sort of point there I'd sort of want to make is that even people who have quite a bizarre religious viewpoint on the world, you know, in practice that doesn't sort of stop us sort of, you know, sort of getting on and sort of working together. But of course, you know, once you press certain buttons and the conversation goes in a certain direction, then sometimes people's quite bizarre beliefs come to the surface. But yeah, and I suppose where the conversation just went about the existence of a soul and whether or not that also applies to animals in the opinions of people who've got that mindset. Of course, that leads on to one of the other big sort of philosophical questions along with, you know, is or isn't there a God? And that's the mind-body problem, so-called. And that rests on the view is that, you know, the physical world represented by the body, how does that interact with the supposed sort of mental, ethereal, non-physical world of the mind, which has got sort of similarities to the concept of a soul? Of course, you know, we would say that rests on a false premise in assuming that the mind is different to the brain and the mind exists in some sort of non-physical realm. But yeah, I suppose, yeah, my point there was that the, you know, that philosophical question about God leads on to other philosophical questions about the so-called mind-body problem. And again, if this sort of question of religion goes further down a scientific route in sort of relying on its arguments against the existence of either a god or a soul or anything non-physical, that reminds me of the views of a philosopher called Alex Rosenberg, who I think around about 15 years ago published a book called The Atheist's Guide to Reality. I remember writing a review for the Standard about it, and his stance is he's very atheist with a capital A, and his view is that everything can be everything about sort of existence and reality can be explained through physics, which again is a sort of a scientific view is reasonable enough. But he takes a very, very hard line view on that and says that, you know, that there's no such thing as free will, in that everything is down to sort of deterministic chains of cause and effect. So nothing is really down to choice, and we're all sort of mechanical robots working along scientifically predetermined routes. So he takes a very hard line scientific physicists' view of things. But of course that then makes would say, oh, if you can explain everything through physics, how do you explain things through economics in the way that a socialist would in explaining how society works? And again, I suppose that's another question for socialists in making sure that our view is compatible with a scientific view, because obviously our economic view of society follows scientific principles. But how does that equate to a, you know, a very hardline scientific view of the kind that Alex Rosenberg takes, which again has questions on free will, morality, which again we would need to consider how would that scientific view on aspects of reality like or experience like ethics or determinism, how can we explain that in a socialistic way? So again, I'm starting to waffle now, so I'll stop. But I suppose my point there is, you know, a scientific view as applied to society, what other implications does that have for our socialist viewpoint? Yeah, thank you. Cheers. Yeah.
Okay, Howard.
Thanks, Adam. Yeah, very interesting. I think we can. I've got a number of things to say. I won't say them all right away because they're of a, you know, of a different nature from one another. But just to sort of widen it out, Mike used the term hard line. And I suppose the question that arises is, are we too hard line in insisting that that if you've got any kind of religious belief of any description, you can't be in the Socialist Party. Quite a long time ago, God, it's about 5 years now, I think, I gave one of these Friday night talks. I think it was shortly after the lockdown ended. And the title of it was, Does Religion Matter to Socialists? And it sort of talked largely about the experience I'd had in looking at the questionnaires people had filled in order to apply for membership of the party, you know, in my capacity as a member of the Membership Applications Committee. And it wasn't and still isn't unusual for people to be, you know, largely in agreement with, they fill in the questionnaire, and you can see from their answers, they're largely in agreement with our take on things, but they sort of stumble when it comes to religion. Not all of them, obviously, but some of them do. And they stumble for different reasons. I mean, it's very rare that we get applications from people who are sort of, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Catholics, so to speak, you know, that they belong to a particular religious denomination and, you know, believe what that denomination teaches. But you get people who want to join and who say that, yes, they've got some kind of religious stroke spiritual belief, which they think is something personal to themselves. And they don't see the connection between that and socialism. They think socialism is fine. They agree with our case. They'd like to join, but they want to keep this sort of private spiritual dimension, which they think is important, and they think other people should be able to have as well. I've always been a bit equivocal on that, I must say. I mean, when you consider that about 60% of people in this country, for example, profess some form of religious belief, religious or spiritual belief. I mean, you know, if we're too hardline, we sort of automatically rule out the majority of the population from being socialists. Should we do that? I'm not sure. That's all I'll say. I'll just sort of raise that issue for the moment anyway, before sort of complicating it by saying, you know, various other things.
Okay. Somebody called Anya. I'm calling myself Anya.
Hiya. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, all good. So I kind of want to sidetrack the discussion, because, of course, recently there's been this controversy over Cheddar Man. So this is sort of adjacent in the sense that, you know, that this is sort of people trying to bend science to the will of their politic or their beliefs. And so, of course, I don't know if anybody's been following this, but a lot of the sort of far-right Nazi types, the sort of white supremacist types, have been making various claims about Cheddar Man. I hope everybody's familiar with Cheddar Man being, you know, the sort of most complete skeleton that they've found in the UK, the earliest sort of full example of a hominid in the UK. And of course, there was this sort of you know, a while ago, it was they found through, you know, genetic testing of his bones or something, or some other markers, that his skin color was brown, like dark brown. So of course, you know, it was sort of debunking the idea that Britain is a white nation or whatever. And of course, this has now become contentious again. And it's not, I mean, it's such a terrible sort of argument, because, well, not only Cheddar Man wasn't even, you know, that early, really. It's just the fact that we have this evidence of him, and that's, you know, he's not even that the most early example of an inhabitant of the Isles. So but, you know, it's being weaponized by these white supremacists to sort of say, you know, oh, we've always been a white nation and things like that. So, you know, quite often science does get sort of misused.
Okay, thanks. But I don't think the United Kingdom existed, did it? It was part of the land mass of Europe at one point, wasn't it? I think. Anyway, nobody else want to say anything. Well, to come back to Howard's point, I think there's a difference between what might be called, I think, spiritual views and religious views. Personally, I don't like the word spiritual because it is associated with soul and religion and so on. But I mean, we're not crude materialists. We don't think that ideas exist or emotions exist and so on. So I mean, that's something different. But the actual that question in the that membership question, I think it's got the wrong way around. It says, I can't remember exactly said it's a peculiar question anyway. It says, why do socialists think you can't hold religious views and be a member of the party? Which there could be all sorts of answers to answer that. It would be better if they ask, are you a materialist? And I think, Mike mentions he's got these relatives who are Jehovah's Witnesses. When it comes to everyday life, we are materialists. When their car breaks down, they don't pray to God. They go to a garage to get it repaired. So I mean, what we are trying to establish is: do you think basically that only humans can save themselves? We don't think there's any savior, any other superior being, or who's going to save humanity, or for that matter, that there's any other life but the one that we've got. If you reject those two things, that's enough. You don't have to be a philosophical materialist and know all about the theories of atheism or something. As long as you reject the idea that there's no future life and there's no superior being that has interfered in nature or history, that's that's okay. Anyway. Anybody else want to say anything?
I thought I haven't put my hand up.
Well, I can see you. Yeah, okay.
The hand's disappeared.
I saw your hand, yeah.
But I'm just wondering why sort of so many people still believe in God. What does it give them? Have we got an answer to that?
That's an interesting question, Stephen, which I will answer in a moment.
Without being sexist, I've noticed that it seems to be a lot of women are more spiritual or go to church more often than anyone goes these days. Also, I noticed that if you see the outside Buckingham Palace, Queen's dead, is the king now. But you get, see, the crowd seems to be mainly women.
You're going to answer that, Howard. But I think, in fact, people who don't have control over their lives, tend to believe in a god or astrology or something like that. I mean, I remember in France, in 1981, the so-called Socialist Party and the Communist Party won the elections, and Mitterrand became president. Everybody was thinking, "Oh yes, we can change things." But of course, he failed after within a couple of years. And at that point, more people became interested in astrology and had spiritual views because they didn't think. They realised that in fact they couldn't control the way things are. That there must be some other force controlling it. And I think I don't know whether that's what Howard is going to say. Are you, Howard? If you are, we can't hear you.
Yeah, you're muted, Howard.
Yeah, sorry. Let me quote a couple of real life examples of people who have been keen to join the party, but have ended up not doing so because of because of this particular issue. And I say real life examples, they're examples from people who've applied via the online via the membership application committee. I just quote what one of them said. He said, "I know the party has always had a fundamental opposition to organized religion, viewing it as illusory at best and a means of keeping workers subjugated at worst. I take a slightly less hostile line. However, I understand that the party has a fundamentally materialist conception of history, rooted in a worldview that sees only the tangible and physical relations of production and society as important. To the extent that religion is used to pacify and divide the masses and to keep them ignorant of the relationship between capital and labour, it stands in the way of the socialist project and must be stopped. I accept that. But to the extent that religion is a quiet comfort and a tribune for the poor and lost, I do not think it is harmful. Perhaps no religion will survive the transition to socialist thought amongst the clear majority of the world population. Perhaps in the future socialist world, people will still meet together to consider things intangible and incomprehensible. In either case, I view religion as inherently neutral. It is how it is used as a tool of social control that really matters. So that's one sort of commentary. I've got a couple of other shorter ones now, which I'll throw in as well. There's one applicant, for example, answered the questions in the questionnaire very well, but to the question about religion, he wrote that he was a Sikh, S-I-K-H, a Sikh. And we replied to discuss this with him and explain we were opposed to religion because it militates against socialist ideas. We explained that we saw it as irrational to suppose there was some kind of supreme force or being that was ultimately in control of things and for which there was no evidence. He got back and said he didn't disagree with what we were saying, but he also said, what you're telling me is that to join your party, I'll have to stop being a Sikh. Sorry, I can't do that. It's part of my life. That was his response. Felt sorry for him, actually, but obviously that had to be the end of it. And finally, we had another, and this is sort of quite amusing in a way, I suppose, we had another application from a former member who said he'd always been a socialist and still was, and to the question on religion in the questionnaire, he'd given a somewhat equivocal answer. We got back to him on this for clarification, and he said, I'll come clean. My ideas haven't changed. I've always been a socialist, but I've become a Church of England vicar. I know I can't join, so I'm withdrawing my application. So there we are. There are all sorts of different reactions to this, to the religion thing. And, I suppose while 60% of the population professes some form of religious belief, that's likely to happen.
Right. Paddy, I think your name appears before Mike, so Paddy.
Oh, Adam, I think Mike was first, actually. Also, Adam, you started to crackle.
Is that better, is it?
Oh, that sounds all right, yeah.
Yeah, just taking out the mouse. Okay.
Yeah, I think Mike was first.
Oh, cheers, thanks, yeah. I want to come back on a couple of previous points that were made, but hopefully it sort of loops around to what Howard just said. Adam, a while back you made the point better than I did about Jehovah's Witnesses when their car breaks down and they phone a mechanic rather than praying. Yeah, I suppose that was the point I was going to make, that people could still have sort of function in capitalist life regardless of their beliefs. But with what Stephen was saying about what religion sort of gives to people, and I was thinking as well about how people sort of acquire their beliefs, and of course with a lot of religious people, they've grown up with that belief. It's been in their sort of family, it's been in their immediate culture, so they've sort of developed the belief alongside when they developed language an understanding of the world, so it's embedded in their sort of how they've grown. And of course that means that a lot of people haven't sort of questioned their religious beliefs because to them it appears normal. It's what they've grown up with and learnt. And of course that's sort of quite a lazy approach to have if you have a set of beliefs in your head and you don't sort of choose to question them because they're so ingrained in you. And I think that that applies to a lot of religious people. Not everyone, of course, you know, plenty of religious people do question their beliefs. And of course, that's healthy. But I think there's a difference between a lot of, us as socialists, in that we might have grown up with those beliefs around us, but because of the nature of the socialist mindset, it encourages you to question what you've seen around you and sort of go against accepted narratives. So maybe we're sort of by nature a bit more questioning than a lot of religious people. But with what it sort of gives, what religion gives, gives you sort of a moral code. It gives you a sort of an account of sort of life and morality, and it gives you a set of sort of reassuring beliefs, especially around sort of death. I think that's maybe more or less hard to get your head around if you've got a religious belief in life after death, whereas for atheists that's not necessarily an easy belief to have, that there's of nothing beyond death. So again, it's more challenging in that way, whereas religion provides sort of a comfort in a way that maybe socialist beliefs don't. So I think maybe we've got a sort of a tougher way of having a sort of an attitude to reality, because it is more questioning and doesn't rely on sort of false comforts. That's me. Thank you.
Okay, Paddy.
I was going to answer, I thought somebody else was going to say this, but nobody has, about Stephen's question of why people like religion. I mean, there actually is very likely to be a biological answer to this as well. There's been studies, neuroscientists have done studies where they get religious people and then they put them in MRI scanners and see what lights up when they have religious thoughts. And it appears that these religious thoughts activate the same brain circuits as love and drug-induced euphoria. So basically religion lights up the pleasure centres. So it's a bit like getting stoned. So I think, in answer to your question, Stephen, they like it because it gets them high. I mean, it doesn't have to be real, of course, for that to work. Which begs the question, what brain regions would light up for socialists? I definitely don't think euphoria would be involved. But my other thought was, I found out recently from a source, I haven't really gone into it to check, but one online source claims that one in four Muslims globally are actually apostates. In other words, they don't believe word of it, but they don't dare say, because being an apostate in Islam is punishable by death in a lot of countries. But the point of saying that is that what people claim overtly, when 60% of people claim to be religious, and what they really think are two quite different things. So I think this is something that is the way things are going. All religions are in decline everywhere in the world among the young generation. Not so much at the older, but certainly with Generation Z, they're at sort of world historic lows. So I think this is probably a problem that will go away by itself. The world will decide it has no need for that hypothesis, Adam reminded us about Laplace. Thank you.
Don't you put the hand up? I can't.
I can see your hand. Somebody can explain why you are. Well, no, it's still coming. Just say this. You have to go to reactions and things. But just okay. if you want to speak, speak.
well, there is a theory at the moment. It's called the replacement theory, isn't it? The Farage and his lot, that all these Muslims coming here eventually planning to take over. But could it be that some of them are actually coming because they want to get away from religion and do stricter forms of living?
Probably. Do you want to speak again, Paddy?
I was just going to answer that point about replacement theory.
Okay.
But it's basically based on completely false statistics put out by a think tank which is funded by none other than Nigel Farage personally. It's made up. It's just made up. It's very popular on the far right, of course.
Well, yeah, I try to do the maths and
it doesn't work.
It works out.
Yeah, it's like they also claim that rape and sexual abuse are 10 times more likely among immigrants than the national population. But that's because they're again fiddling the statistics completely.
We were talking about that today with Badenoch, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, basically lying bastards.
Yeah, I was going to take up the point you made previously, Paddy, about the 60% of the people saying they're religious. I don't think that's a proper measure of religiosity, whatever the word would be. A more accurate figure would be how many people go to church. I don't think most people do. Religion is completely irrelevant, as far as their life is concerned. They don't pray. They just get on with their lives. I would think that the number of people that actually believe in a religion and its precepts is pretty small. It's much bigger than us, of course, but I doubt it as much as 60%. Actually, I'm quite proud of the fact that the part of Britain which is the most has the least religion is where, I wasn't born there, but it's where my brother is still living, in Caerphilly in South Wales. That's the part, part of the world where most number of people said they weren't religious. I mean, I have a theory as to why, incidentally, because there aren't any Muslim immigrants there. But in fact, that is, so I think the census figures show that religion, even pretending or professing to be religious, is declining. But I would challenge the figure that anything like 60% of people really believe in this stuff, the Bible and the teachings of the various churches. Anyway, Freddie, I see you haven't spoken before.
Yeah, I forgot to unmute myself there. I was going to... I was going to try and talk to you without unmuting myself and talk to you all spiritually, because you would all know what I was saying without actually hearing me. But yeah, I mean, this for me, it's been an interesting discussion, Adam, and the address that you gave, and interesting comments from contributors so far. But for me, I can't understand this question of religion in relation to the socialist case, or the case for socialism, that religion plays any part in it for me. And Catholicism has been mentioned quite a bit tonight, and in my early sort of formative years, I was brought up a Catholic, but very quickly realised by the time I was about 14, this wasn't for me at all. And by the time I was 17, never bothered going to chapel at all after that. So, Catholicism, and this was slightly before I even met the party, and their views on religion, etc. And I largely, substantially agree with the comments of Paddy, for example, and I think you've reiterated, Adam, I think it's unlikely there's some 60-odd percent of people have any sort of religious views now. I look around, and certainly in years gone by, who would have ever thought that churches were getting transferred into being pubs? For example, it would have been unheard of quite a few years ago. And we talk about things like a moral code. What exactly is this moral code? Yeah, I mean, there were, there's obviously got to be codes of conduct, but a moral code, I'm not quite sure what that is. And when you talk about the soul, what exactly is the soul, for example? What is this spiritual feeling? There's so much of it alien, I think, and it should be alien to socialists and to the Socialist Party, that there be any sort of real credibility given to it. We would somebody's mentioned earlier on also about the materialist conception of history. And I think that's where our position should remain. I mean, I'm pretty much aware, I would certainly think, that, for example, when the party's standing candidates at elections, whether they're local elections or general elections or parish council elections, if they ever do that, etc., we may not get a whole sort of inundated with votes on occasions. I'm pretty sure that some people who are voting may well have religious beliefs. So, from that perspective, they may well have a good understanding of socialism. At least I would hope they would, because if our leaflets are anything to go by, our addresses, election addresses are anything to go by, I think, generally speaking, the position would be quite clear that, we don't subscribe to religious overtones. So I'm not quite sure why we have this sort of concept that we're over, perhaps a little bit too zealous about our opposition to religion. I think the point was made in that, we no longer believe in sort of gods of war, gods of thunder, gods of rain, gods of whatever it might be. And even if there is such a thing, it's obviously that none of us believe in, even if there was such a thing, the reality is we're living in this world just now, and this is where our concerns are. There's no such thing as afterlife to me, and if some people think so, then, that's their choice. But we need to advocate the case for socialism without any sort of religious overtone in it. So I don't know if I've come across terribly well in the points I'm trying to make there, but religion plays no part in my life, nor any spiritual or moral codes. And what is this soul that people talk about? I think Paddy, I'm going to shut up in a minute. I think Paddy made a fair point earlier on when they were talking about animals, etc. Animals can show empathy and such like to each other. And when you look at a lot of these natural world programs that are on, you can see how animals can behave with each other. But whether or not that's a soul or whatever it might be, well, I don't know if it is or isn't. I don't believe there is such a thing as soul and spirituality. But anyway, I'll be quiet now. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Lots of people here now. I've got to make it right. I think Howard was first. And then, okay. And then right. Dougie. Yeah, okay.
Last time, this promise. Just two things first. The Associated Press, the religion team of the Associated Press, published a report relatively short time ago entitled The Nones, N-O-N-E-S. And the nones are what they're calling the non-believers, people unaffiliated with any organised religion. They did it sort of throughout the world. And the 40% of non-believers actually came from there as well. But you might be interested to know that the nations where the largest number of people are secular, claim to be non-believers, the three mentioned are Japan, Israel, and Uruguay. Those are the three. But just to come back now to what we've been talking about regarding whether people who practice religion really do believe in it. There's a little joke we shall tell in a moment, my background is Jewish, and we weren't an Orthodox family in any shape or form, but we followed the rituals and so on. And I remember people asking me sort of, friends who weren't Jewish, you know, what the Jews believe, didn't have a clue, couldn't answer the question, and I'd never heard anyone else answer it. And I heard a little joke some time ago, and the joke consists of, well, the way it begins is that there's an ultra-Orthodox Jewish American family who want their son, their teenage son, to get the best possible education. And they look around and they come to the conclusion that the best education he'll get is actually at a Jesuit school. They decide to send him to a Jesuit school. You know, the fable levels of education of the Jesuits, very impressed by. So he goes away to this Jesuit school. The son, teenage son, comes back at half term and he's full of enthusiasm for the education he's getting there. He's particularly interested in the theology. And he tells his father, you know, this long-bearded sort of rabbi-type individual, he tells his father he's learning all about the three divinities, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. They said, at a certain point, the father stops him. He says, look, son, forget about all that. There's only one God, and we don't believe in him. And I thought that summed up very well, you know, the kind of things that some people have said, that they, you know, they practice a religion, but they don't really believe it. It's just a sort of, it's just ritual. And I think that's the experience of, I would say, the vast majority of people in the Jewish religion anyway throughout the world.
Right, according to my thing, your next, Dougie.
All right, it's an interesting discussion, really, you know. I've got friends who are religious in Scotland, really, you know, and Bill is married to a woman who's very religious, right? And he goes along with her, and he actually does the mic for the priest or the minister or whatever. But, I mean, he said it's the only place in Scotland where you get a community apart from his golf club or whatever. So a lot of people, they're brought up religious, and they get some sort of community out of it as well, right? And they do things, you know, together and stuff like that. But one thing I was wondering, if anybody's got any idea, why Reform's still doing so well and winning elections and when they've got very anti-working class views or whatever. Is it just because they bang on immigrants or whatever and small boats and stuff like that? Or do people think that they're going to represent the workers when they actually basically don't, really, you know? So, I know people thought there'd be a flash in the pan, but they seem to be getting stronger and stronger, right? I just wonder if Henry's got any views on that. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Then Mike and then Anya.
Thanks. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about the question Dougie just raised, so I'm not sure I have anything to say on Dougie's point, but I wanted to pick up on what Freddie said a while back, because he picked up on, I think, my use of the phrase moral code or in relation to what religion gives people. And my point there was, yeah, it gives people a moral code, but it doesn't mean it's very good moral code. You know, there are some aspects of Islam, in particular its ethics, that I find, you know, quite repugnant, really, some of what they deem as morally right. And of course, some of the Ten Commandments are okay, but in Christianity. But of course, the point is that they're commandments. You know, they're what people are told to do, and of course, you know, the moral codes that are reflected in the various religions tend to be reflect the power structures around at the times that those religions were developed, and have obviously sort of hung on now because those power structures are still relevant. So yeah, of course, any moral code which is one of the principles of a religion reflects power structures which have nothing to do with socialism, even if some of those individual moral principles might be okay in a different context. Yeah, cheers. Yeah,
and when we're talking quite a lot about how religion isn't relevant at the moment, I'm going to talk about how it is relevant. Unfortunately, it's relevant, because of course we're seeing, even with President Trump in America at the moment, you know, somebody who declared himself an atheist in his autobiography, is now, you know, using a lot of religious right, you know, power structures to maintain his dictatorship, his rule. And, you know, and we've seen, you know, a lot of their policy is, you know, motivated by religion. We've got, although it seems like the far right in this country don't seem to be having as much success at 53.53. Thank you. Sorry, that was my groceries. As Tommy Robinson recently had his putting the Christ back into Christmas rally. I heard it was a really poor turnout. I think he had less than 1,000 people, I heard. You know, nothing like his massive rally with Elon Musk. But you know, American politics definitely is being hugely influenced by the Christian right, you know, conservative camp, unfortunately. So yeah. What was the question? It's gone now. That's all right. Anyway, thank you.
Napoleon was like Trump. I mean, Napoleon didn't believe in God and all that, but he defended religion on the grounds that it kept the kept the people down. And all this thing about Islam, about stoning people and killing you if you're an apostate. It's in the Bible. It's in Leviticus. You know, Christians and Jews are supposed to do the same thing, but of course, in the changed circumstances, that's all, you know, that's all died out. But it hasn't in some parts of the of the Muslim world. Can I come back? Okay, yeah, sorry, John. Okay, John.
All I wanted to say was that the morality of Christianity is a cherry-picked thing. What we might think of as the nicer Christians, they cherry-pick all the nice bits in their big bad book called the Bible. But in actual fact, that book's full of such ridiculous drivel and such nasty stuff, such genocidal stuff as well, that really nobody could take that as a book. That was advancing any kind of morality that any person might think was conducive to human well-being. So there are a lot of reasons for opposing religion, not least its history. I think those grounds are very, very strong, and just the fact that, there's no evidence for any of these things. The scientist who I forget his name at the moment, the guy with the Brief History of Time guy,
Stephen Hawkins.
Yes, that's right. I was nearly saying Dawkins, and I was saying that's not right. Stephen Hawking. His family, one of his sisters was on TV, and they were talking about their early life as children. And he said in their household, they were all encouraged to talk about things like theology, particularly at the breakfast table. And she said the wonderful thing about theology is that you don't need any facts. So she said even the children who didn't know very much when they were young could join in and speculate on all these marvellous and extraordinary ideas about gods and hobgoblins and all sorts of things that go bump in the night or even during the day. So, you know, I found that quite an amusing take on it, that you don't need any facts and, you know, you can just speculate about these beings, divine beings, and all their subsidiaries, all the saints and angels, or the sort of minor gods. I mean, in the Roman pantheon, there were a lot of different gods, and to some extent, the church absorbed a lot of that and made them into the saints, so that they could people who were already used to one form of worship could easily more easily accommodate themselves to the new forms, because the new forms were actually quite similar. And so there was that sort of continuity there. So religion is a very creepy thing, and it's very sneaky. And in the United States, the Christian nationalists, they make the absurd claim that the United States was founded as a Christian nation, which anyone who knows the history at all knows that that's almost the exact opposite of the truth. It was founded as a secular nation, but with the view that religious persecution wouldn't, people would have freedom of religion, which they hadn't had back in Europe. And that was the idea of the United States, that it would be a secular nation. The government would not make any laws regarding religion and not prohibit any religion either. So that's actually worked out quite well for religion in the United States, because all these wild ideas of religion that were carried over from Europe have sort of incubated in the United States and prospered to a great extent, you know, to a ridiculous extent, where a nation that has perhaps the most advanced technology on Earth nevertheless has all these wage slaves whose heads are burdened with all this silliness about gods and devils and evil spirits and good spirits and, you know, saviours that, you know, I'll find your keys for you. This is the creator of the universe, but if you lose your keys, pray to the saviour and he'll do it. You know, in the United States, this saviour, this universal saviour of Christendom has become a personal saviour. I hear Americans saying all the time, my own personal saviour. And you just think, you know, they're making this up as they go along, as that religion has done right from its beginnings. But, yeah, we just have to really look at the history of religion to see how harmful it really is. Thanks.
My thing, the next person is Steve.
Yeah, thanks. From one of the most atheistic countries in the world, Uruguay. I just wanted to go back to what Howard was saying. The first sort of statement that he read from that person who applied to join, and I thought he answered his own question: why we wouldn't allow people with this spirituality into the party, because it's a comfort. This idea that there's something looking after your interests is a comfort that distracts people from the class struggle. And yeah, you know, so I think he said he's a bloke. I think he's answered the question as to, he's got it right. That is why Socialist Party doesn't allow people with spiritual ideas into as membership. The other thing I'd like to ask Howard is: are those people still around? Are they still supporters of the party? Do they still take the standard? Do they spread socialist ideas, including the vicar? I'd really like to hope that they do. But yeah, thanks.
Okay, Janet, you're next.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for everybody who's spoken. I'm enjoying the discussion. I think that from a woman's point of view, it's to argue the case, the women have less time, historically have less time to think about anything other than shopping and cooking and caring for the children. And that makes it very difficult to go along any sort of avenue of investigation that's going to question, which we do and have done and should do. Everything should be questioned all the time. And so to do that, you have to raise yourself above the ordinary everyday concerns of life. And that's not easy. I didn't have my two children until I was in my late 30s. And that gave me lots of time on the pathway to socialism that I was before that time. So it gave me time to read and think and discuss and question, always question. And so for poor women, for us, it's difficult to do that because we don't have the time generally to do this mental hard work. And also the business of indoctrination, which is terrific and terrible, what generally people go through in the indoctrination that they have in the schooling, in the social activities, and even the parents. My parents pushed us out to Sunday school so they could have a few hours of Sunday afternoon without any children around, which must have been quite pleasant for them, but meant that there was more time added to the indoctrination that went on in my head for ages. And to give up religion was a way of leaving the possible foundations of security, it seemed to me, in my teens, when I was questioning religion and wondering what to do about it, and thinking, well, okay, I'll go along with the idea that there isn't any God and there isn't any need for religion and see whether I get damned. And I didn't get damned. So, you know, I increasingly mentally didn't have the religious ideas didn't have any hold on me. And it was a great relief to feel free from those constraints that religion had imposed. And then when I became in contact with the party, I found that I'd ground for a reasonable sanity, in fact, a sanity view of society, because everything else had seemed mad up to then. Everybody else had seemed mad. And I felt terribly alone because I didn't come from any political background. And so it was a great relief to me when I chanced upon the party, and it seemed to answer all my questions. And in with questioning and investigation, it answered all of my questions, and has given me a much happier basis for my life, a long and troubled life, but nevertheless a long life. And so I thank the party for that security, mental security, and I'll stop there. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Janet. Dougie again.
Yeah, somebody once said, if you read the Bible, you'll be an atheist. If somebody reads the Bible for you, you'll be religious or whatever. And just John mentioned Stephen Hawking. He was actually an atheist. He just thought he was lucky to have the chance to explore the universe, you know, like he did with his cosmology. He didn't think there was any afterlife or anything like that, Stephen Hawking. One of the things I find religion sometimes, it's an abusive relationship. If you don't agree with them, you're going to hell, really, you know, that kind of argument, really, you know. And it's quite nasty, and it's the same with the Muslims as well, really, you know. If you don't agree with us, you know. So it can be quite nasty. And it's indoctrinated into children at school and things, and in the family and things. But I think religion is dying out in a lot of ways with young people, really, you know. I mean, people don't pray to get well when they're ill. They go to the doctor or they go to the hospital or whatever, you know. People are materialists, really, you know. I mean, there is a church near me that says spiritual healing. But, I mean, and that's just nonsense. It's like saying somebody can predict the lottery numbers or whatever. If psychic could predict the lottery numbers, all psychics would be billionaires or millionaires or whatever. And it's the same religion, really, you know. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't make any sense, really. It's an abusive relationship with some people, you know.
Okay, looks like we've exhausted the discussion, but I did want to take up again the three cases that Howard mentioned that were turned down. I mean, the first one, I suspect that he was religious himself. I mean, if he just said, but other people being religious and he wasn't religious, it might have been a different, you know, a different case. But I suspect that he would have been religious, so that would have ruled him out. mean, the person I feel sorry for is the Sikh, because I mean, although Sikhs are religion, it's a bit like the Jews, isn't it? They consider themselves to be a people. Whether you can be a Sikh atheist or not, I don't know. And the vicar, I think he might have been the same vicar that applied to join. Oh, I don't know, in the 1990s, he'd met party members during the war when he was a conscientious objector, and he'd been convinced by them. But that was his job, so he kept it. But there was one other case which Howard didn't mention, the case of the Quaker atheist. Now, I don't know what a Quaker atheist is, but I don't know whether Quakers believe in that Jesus was just an idea or something. I mean, that another marginal case. But I think Steve's point is relevant. Are these people, I mean, still socialists? I mean, there's a famous example of a Liverpool branch where their most active member was a non-member. You know, he wouldn't join because he was a Buddhist of some thought. And there have been other people who've been sympathisers and have helped the party. Anyway, so unless Howard wants to reply or anybody else wants to say anything, we can close the meeting and wish each other.
Adam, just to briefly reply to what you said about.
Yeah, yes, I expected you would. Yes, yes, thanks. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not putting my hand up, but just. I think that if it's the person I'm thinking of, he described himself as a non-theist Quaker. And in answering the question, what are your views on religion and its relation to the party's case for socialism? His answer was, I believe in living in harmony with the environment, with other people who are all our equals, and with other countries. For to Quakers like me, countries need not exist. So he believed in a sort of brotherhood or sisterhood of humanity. He didn't join in the end, a bit sadly, maybe. I don't know. But, we certainly weren't far apart anyway, that's for sure. And while I'm speaking, just a brief word on what... the question Dougie asked about the reform being the boat party, the stop the boats party anyway. There's an interesting piece in the very latest edition of The Big Issue, and I don't think much of John Bird, I must say, who was the original editor of The Big Issue. He's now Sir John Bird, isn't he? Incidentally, not many people know this, but as a younger man, he was a Trotskyist. But anyway, he's always sort of rattling on about government policy on poverty, how things have got to improve, and of course they never do. But in the latest issue, really sort of rings a bell about reform. He says, poverty, he says, sorry to be so grim in the days before Christmas, but we have tough decisions in the new year. Ending the arrival of new boats seems to be what millions are prepared to change their party allegiance to achieve. That's the harsh truth. Poverty is distorting the picture. And it's the next sentence which I think is interesting. The further away from poverty you are, the more likely you are not to worry about boats. Absolutely, yeah. So it is about boats, in a sense, sort of ostensibly, but it's mainly about poverty. People somehow believe that their condition, their social condition, is to do with boats. Obviously, nothing to do with them at all.
Okay, thanks.
Can I have a quick word?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Danny. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Adam. The thing about religion is they get you identified with this all-powerful God, which means you cannot identify with common humans, and that's a big problem with it.
Okay.
And the other thing is, it gives you an opportunity to look down on everybody who's not religious, which is alienating.
That's what Feuerbach said in his Essence of Christianity.
Yeah. So another clever thought.
Right, thanks. Anybody else want to say anything before the meeting comes in? There won't be a meeting next week or the week after. So the next one is on the 7th of January, I think. So I can't wish you a happy Christmas, but I don't know, what is it? Yuletide or something?
Season's greetings.
Season's greetings, yeah. I bought some Christmas cards which had season's greetings on, thinking they were right. I opened them and it said inside Merry Christmas, so I had to cross that out. But, so I said Merry New Year. Okay, so unless anyone wants to say anything, that's it.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks very much.
Thanks, comrade.
Yeah, thanks, Adam.
Cheers, Adam. Happy Hanukkah, comrade.
Greetings, everyone, then.
Good wishes to you all.
All the best.